But for our purposes, we will say that it is a sign of extra devotion. And I'll tell you a medrash. The medrash says as follows. The medrash says that when Mashiach is going to come, the nations of the world, the non-Jewish nations, the goyim, are going to have a complaint. And their complaint is going to be that we never had mitzvahs, so why should we now not have reward? The fact is that the Jews will be at that time having an incredible reward, and then the non-Jews will say, give us mitzvahs. Let us prove that we can also do it. Now, parenthetically, the Torah tells us, and we're going to read this in next week's Torah portion, it's actually this week's Torah portion, Parshas Vizos HaBracha, the last parsha in the Torah, which we're not reading this Shabbos tomorrow, but we are going to read on Simchas Torah next Sunday, Mirtz Hashem. So the Torah says that when Moshe is saying this, that when Hashem gave us the Torah, Ofia mehar paran v'yasa mariv vos kodesh, which means Rashi explains to us that Hashem first offered the Torah to the other nations, to the Arab nations, to the Yishmael nations, the Arab nations, to the Edomite nations, the Christian nations, which are today the Christians, the Romans. These are basically the children of Esav and the children of Yishmael, because since they were also children of Avraham, and Hashem had made the covenant with Avraham, so Hashem offered the Torah to all of Avraham's children. Arguably, even the Chinese, the Asians are Avraham's children, arguably. It says that Keturah, who is Hagar, the Torah tells us, sent away, had an extra six kids, and they were sent away to eastward, to the lands of the east, which basically is the Far East. So arguably, it could be that that's the source of the Asians, maybe even the Indians, who knows? But at any rate, Hashem did offer the Torah, and they rejected it. That's what it says in Parshas Vizos HaBracha. So they're going to have a second bite at the apple, the Medrash says. When Mashiach comes, they're going to realize they made a mistake, that they rejected the Torah. And Hashem is going to tell them, okay, you made a mistake, welcome to the club. We'll give you a mitzvah. Which mitzvah are they going to get? They're going to get the mitzvah of sitting in the sukkah. And then the Medrash says, Hashem is going to make it rain like cats and dogs, like nobody's business. Hashem is going to make it windy like nobody's business. Hashem is going to make the weather unbearable. And the same Medrash concludes they're going to run out of the sukkah. They're going to curse the sukkah. They're going to kick the sukkah. And they will, of course, forfeit their right to get reward. So, you know, if you want to look at it that way, Hashem is giving us opportunity to love the sukkah and to run into the sukkah. But I'm going to talk about in a moment anyway the power of the sukkah and the power of sukkahs. So why is it raining? I don't know. The Gemara tells us that the keys to certain natural phenomenon are given over to the great tzaddikim and to the prophets, that they can control nature in certain ways, that they control certain things, except that they cannot control the rains and some number of other things, but rain is not. So having said that, again, just to tell you the complete story, there are stories from Choni Amagil. Gemara tells a story. Great tzaddik from the times of the Mishnah period, whose name was Choni, and this Choni from one of the sages of the Mishnah, drew a circle around himself, very famous story, and he said, I'm not leaving the circle until it starts to rain. It was a famine in Israel at that time. He's buried outside near Tveria. You go to Tveria now, his grave is there. He could pray at his grave. So I don't know the reason for the rain. The Gemara does tell us very different, interesting things. But at any rate, we do have opportunity to have zechus, to have mitzvah. The halacha is that when it rains in the sukkah, on general, during the week of Sukkot, you're not obligated to sit in the sukkah. And the Gemara tells us that based on the pasuk, the verse in the Torah, it says that you should live, you should dwell. Basukot teishvu shivat yamim, you should dwell in the sukkah for 7 days. So the Gemara says, teishvu ke'ein taduru, you should live in the sukkah the way you would live in your homes, which means it's for the positive and it's for the negative. Anything that you would ordinarily do in your house, you should do during the week of Sukkot in the sukkah. So if you ordinarily eat a meal in your house, eat the meal in the sukkah. If you ordinarily sleep in your house, sleep in the sukkah. If you ordinarily just stare at the ceiling and relax in your house, do that relaxing and do that daydreaming in the sukkah. That's what the halacha is. At the same time, the Gemara says it works also for the negative. Anything that would cause you to leave your house and not stay in your house, then you don't have to stay in the sukkah. So if your house is raining, your roof is leaking, and it's raining inside your house, nobody would stay in the room. They would move, go somewhere else. So if the sukkah roof is raining and leaking in, obviously, when it rains, it leaks in, then you don't have to. There's no halacha. There's no obligation at that point. If it's too cold, if it's too windy, if there's too many mosquitoes, anything that would cause you to leave your house, you don't have the obligation. If you're in a sense of discomfort, you don't have the obligation. And we'll talk about that in a moment, how that works out on the spiritual side, to stay in the sukkah. This is true of the week of Sukkot, except for making kiddush on the first night of Sukkot. The first night, which is tonight, you have an obligation to say the kiddush. The beginning of the meal, not the rest of the meal, but the beginning of the meal must be done in the sukkah, even if it's raining. And afterwards, the rest of the meal, you can eat inside. That is the halacha. Having said that, the Chabad custom specifically is completely off the charts. The Chabad custom is that we don't eat anything outside the sukkah, not even a snack, not even a glass of water, which is not the general practice. And I say the outside practice of outside Chabad, because the halacha is that only a meal. In other words, would I walk in the street and if I'm drink and if I'm thirsty, would I run back to my house to take a drink? No, I take a drink wherever I am. If I have a snack in my pocket and I'm hungry, would I take out the snack and eat it wherever I am? Would I run back to my house? Of course, you eat a snack wherever you are. So the halacha is that wherever you are, you don't have to eat snacks and drinks in the sukkah. Even men, women don't have, to begin with, the obligation, because it's a time-sensitive mitzvah, time-sensitive positive mitzvah. But for men who have obligation, you don't have to. The Chabad custom, however, is that we do not even drink water outside the sukkah. Having said that, the rest of the normal religious world tries to sleep in the sukkah. Chabad does not sleep in the sukkah. Specifically doesn't sleep in the sukkah. And the reason for that we'll discuss in a moment. So that's a little bit of an overview. So let's talk about Sukkot, which is, of course, starting tonight and goes for 7 days, according to the Torah, 8 days outside of Israel. We have the holiday of Sukkot is described in the Torah, and the reason for celebrating Sukkot is described in two different reasons given for celebrating the holiday of Sukkot. And the two different reasons that are given also concerning Pesach and Shavuos. So we have in Judaism, as you may be familiar, we have three regalim, three holidays that are called regalim. The word regal means foot or feet. And they are holidays when every person is obligated to come to the Beis HaMikdash to travel. And that's why it's called regalim, because the mitzvah is if you can walk, you should walk rather than even take a cart or a carriage or a car. You're close enough to come to the Beis HaMikdash three times a year. Pesach, Shavuos, and Sukkot. Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur, you do not have any obligation to go to the temple, to the Beis HaMikdash. It's only Pesach, Shavuos, and Sukkot. That's what the Torah says. The two major holidays that everybody runs to shul nowadays is the opposite, according to biblical law, according to the Chumash, according to the Torah. And that is Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur, you stay at home and daven, and the Kohen Gadol and Kohanim and the Levim would do the service for you in the Beis HaMikdash. On Pesach, Shavuos, and Sukkot, you have an obligation to go to show up at the Beit HaMikdash. Again, for that reason, in order to reflect that, there are many Hasidim that have the custom of traveling to visit their Rebbe on one of these holidays. You can't go for all three, let's say. It's difficult. You could, fine, wonderful. But at least for one of the holidays, they would go to visit their Rebbe for this reason. Many of the Chabad rabbis, and definitely in Russia and Ukraine, and would travel for Shavuos specifically because it was easier to get away from the communities. But at any rate, this is the three regalim. The Torah tells us that the three holidays of Pesach, Shavuos, and Sukkot are celebrated for a historical reason, which we're all familiar with. Pesach is when we left Egypt. Shavuos is when we received the Ten Commandments, the Torah. We entered into a covenant with Hashem. We became the Jewish nation. And Sukkot celebrates the miracles that the Jews experienced during the 40 years in the desert. The way the Torah expresses it in poetic terms is celebrate Sukkot because Hashem says, Ki bi'anan, in a cloud, Hoshafti et bnei Yisrael, I made the Jews live when I took them out of Egypt. And Rashi explains to us that Hashem didn't put us into sukkah booths. Hashem put us into virtual sukkahs that were huge clouds that protected the Jewish people from all six sides, all dimensions, east, south, north, west, up, down. The clouds protected us from the heat of the sun in the desert. They protected us from snakes and scorpions underneath us. They smoothed out the sand dunes. They smoothed out the traveling. Ordinarily, you go in the desert and there's mountains and dunes and so on. They smoothed it out, straight highway. They cleaned up the garbage. The people would leave garbage around. They would clean up the garbage. And they cleaned our clothing. This is straight in the Chumash. Moshe says that they took care of our clothing and they took care of our shoes. Our shoes would never, Rashi makes the comment, that the clothing would grow on the backs of the kids who were growing as they grew larger. The kids grew older. The clothing would grow, like Rashi says, like the turtle shell grows on a turtle. So, but in order to remember the miracles of the 40 years in the desert, that we were protected from all kinds of dangerous things that happened in the desert. And in fact, we were cocooned and sheltered, and we were living in incredible paradise, like Gan Eden, like living in paradise for those 40 years. So we build a sukkah. That's what it says straight in the Chumash, to remember the 40 years of miracles in the Midbar, in the desert. The Torah further says that that is ancient history. But also in current times, nowadays, there is an agricultural cycle. And this is also straight in the Chumash. The agricultural cycle is that on wheat and barley and the crops that are necessary staple crops are planted in the wintertime. The wintertime in Israel is the rainy season. And things grow. The barley crop gets harvested at Pesach. The wheat crop gets harvested at Shavuos. And what's important about the barley crop is that it was the animal feed. That's how we had food to feed all our animals. The wheat crop, of course, is food for humans. And that's, of course, a staple, bread and all kinds of stuff that people used to make in ancient times and still continue to make from wheat. But it was not brought into the silos, the granaries, the house, the storage until Sukkot. And the reason is because when they harvested the grain, it was moist. And if you put it into your house and you put it in storage, what happens if you put something that's moist and damp in a dark place, especially if you pile up one on top of the other? What happens? It gets rotten. It gets moldy. So you can't do that. Matter of fact, in the Chumash itself, we read that the Egyptians, when Yosef told them that there's going to be interpreting Paro's dreams, he said there's going to be a hunger 7 years and 7 years of plenty before that and store up the food. The Egyptians went and stored up their food, but they didn't know how to store up their food and they stored it damp. And Yosef also stored it damp, but he put desiccant. He put special earth that absorbed the moisture. This is straight in the Chumash. And Rashi commenting on the Chumash, not straight in the Chumash, but Rashi's comments on the Chumash, based on a story where they're coming to Yosef. And that's what happened. So therefore, in ancient Israel, they would not put away they couldn't put away the moist grain, the moist barley grain and the moist wheat kernels. And instead, and therefore, they had to leave it out in the field. And of course, it doesn't rain over the summertime. So they left it over the field. And Sukkot time at the end of the summer, when now the rainy season is going to begin again, the grain is very nice and dry. And they would bring it into the granaries, into the silos, into the houses, into their barns. And that is why the Torah says Sukkot is called Zman Simchatenu, the time of our joy. Because when you get your paycheck, you're not as happy as when you actually deposit the money in your bank, or if you promised a paycheck. Once you have the money in your bank, then you're happy. You sell the merchandise, let's say, and your customer is going to pay you in 30 days, 60 days, 90 days. So it's wonderful that you sold it, but when the customer pays you, then you are happy. And therefore, Sukkot is called Zman Simchasenu in the Torah, the time of rejoicing, the time of joy, because that's our net. Your gross is wonderful. But your net, your take-home pay, that's exactly what you have. And that's what the Jews had then to live over the wintertime when there was now nothing growing. What did they have to look to? What are we going to eat? The stuff that they put into their silos, into their barns on right before Sukkot. So Sukkot is called in the Torah Chag HaAsif, the festival of ingathering, when we actually brought the stuff from the field into our homes. And we actually at that time knew as farmers, which of course the whole system was an agricultural based system, we knew what we had then to eat to feed our families and ourselves over the next few months. We're going to talk about that too. What does it mean, Chag HaAsif, festival of ingathering? So now that I gave you a little bit of a foundation, and forgive me if you're familiar with this, that there are actually two reasons for the celebrations of the holidays, a historical leaving Egypt and being in the desert reason, and a current agricultural reason of current blessings received. So now let's talk about the spiritual side. Spiritual side, we have the month of Tishrei, the first month of the year. The month of Tishrei has three major holidays that are followed actually by a fourth holiday. What are the three major holidays? It's Rosh Hashanah, right at the beginning of the month, Yom Kippur, which is the 10th day of the month, and Sukkot, which is the 15th day of the month. Today is the 14th, and tonight begins the 15th. Sukkot begins. Sukkot lasts for 7 days in the Chumash, an 8 day is out of Israel. And then we have another holiday, a fourth holiday, mysterious, very mysterious holiday, and that's called Shmini Atzeres. Again, a biblical holiday. We're going to say Shehecheyanu again. It's a biblical holiday. And that is a holiday that's appended and follows immediately the holiday of Sukkot, Shmini Atzeres. So in order to understand what's so amazing, what's so wonderful, why the Torah calls Sukkot Zman Simchasenu, the time of our joy, and the Torah calls Sukkot Chag HaAsif, the time of ingathering. So we have to understand, of course, that the Torah speaks to us on many levels. There's a simple level, the pshat, what's called in Hebrew pshat, the simple level. But of course, there is a mystical level, the reasons behind the pshat, the reasons behind. So if a parent tells the kid something, do this, or a general tells a soldier, do this, yes, it means do this, but there's a whole plan, a whole strategy that's playing out. And in order to fulfill the strategy, you have to do this. But it doesn't mean that's the whole picture. Obviously, it's part of some bigger picture. Especially if you're part of a big team, then your part obviously is part of a big picture, a bigger process that's going on that you're helping to make happen, to effectuate. So therefore, let's talk about Pesach, rather, let's talk about Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, and Sukkot, and leading up to Shmini Atzeres. It's a little complicated topic. We'll start it now. Of course, we have next week, we can talk more, Mirtz Hashem, before Shmini Atzeres. So on Rosh Hashanah, what happens is that, of course, Rosh Hashanah is called the Day of Judgment. But on Rosh Hashanah is the day in history that human beings were created. Adam and Chava, Adam and Eve, were created on Rosh Hashanah. That is what happened on Rosh Hashanah. And therefore, every single year, we as humans reestablish our relationship with our Creator, with Hashem. It's not a specifically Jewish event like the giving of the Torah that happened to the Jewish nation. It's a human event. And this was the first day that human beings were able to recognize their Creator for the very simple reason that until that time, there were no human beings. So Adam and Chava were created not as infants, but as fully grown people with full intelligence. As a matter of fact, much vastly superior intelligence to anybody living today. They were the original handiwork of Hashem. The Torah clearly says this, that Adam knew by looking at the animals and the creations, he was able to see the spiritual component of each one. Adam and Chava were incredibly, incredibly brilliant, brilliant, brilliant understanding individuals, complete opposite of what modern science would have us believe about the early people, that they don't know and we do know. They were dumb and we're smart. They were undeveloped and we're more developed. Opposite. The most developed was Adam and Chava. And since that time, we've been debilitating. We've become weaker and weaker in many different ways. That's the Jewish belief, which is why we respect our elders. In the secular society, there's no respect for their elders because the next generation is smarter and better. Why should you respect the previous model that's not as smart as you? So this is a separate discussion. But Rosh Hashanah is the time that Adam and Chava were created, and it's the beginning of, therefore, our relationship with Hashem as humans. We, in the language of the davening, we crown Hashem as our king. What this means is we realize, we accept, we reflect on our relationship as humans with the divine, with Hashem, with the Creator. Comes Yom Kippur, and by Yom Kippur, we are expected to have reflected on how our relationship with our Creator, with Hashem, has been, what we've done, you know, how are we doing? And we are expected, by the time Yom Kippur comes, to have completely turned over new leaves, to have completely returned to our roots, to have completely gone back to the way we're supposed to be, become pristine, pure, amazingly reinvigorated, re-energized. So Yom Kippur is Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur, those 10 days, is a process, now that we've woken up, that we have this relationship with our Creator, with Hashem, is a process of, obviously you don't have to wait until Yom Kippur. We're given actually the whole month before Rosh Hashanah, which is the month of Elul, as a preparation month. But assuming a person didn't do everything, then you have until Yom Kippur. And on the spiritual side, there is also energies that Hashem gives us, because Hashem loves us. Hashem is our loving parent. And Hashem doesn't just let us do, doesn't tell us, go, you guys go and do. Hashem gives us the energies and the resources and the abilities to do everything. So during the month of Elul, Hashem gives us a certain level of energy that's called the 13 attributes of mercy energy. During the 10 days between Rosh Hashanah and Kippur, Hashem gives us a different level of energy that's called the 13 attributes of mercy, but a different level of that, where everything time we daven, we're, it's as if we're davening with a whole minion or with a whole group. Every time we open our mouth, it's as if we are speaking from a position of plurality, of power. That's Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur. What happens after Yom Kippur is that now that we have reestablished our relationship and we have cleared the channels, which is the blockages. So imagine you have a sewer pipe or some other electrical pipe or water pipe, or you know, and you have blockages in the pipe. Or God forbid, a person has blockages in the arteries around the heart, and you go and you do a Roto-Rooter. You go in and clean out the arteries, you clean out the pipes, you clean out the blockages. You know, today it's raining, so if you have leaves blocking your gutters, the water can't flow. Plain and simple, the water has to flow, can't flow because there's blockages. Rosh Hashanah is the time we wake up, we got to clean our gutters, we got to take out the blockages, we got to take out the plaque that's building up in our arteries. By the time Yom Kippur comes, the arteries are clear, the pipes are clear, Everything is flowing. It's amazing. We are like brand new. And the reason that we're brand new on the mystical side, the reason behind that is because there's such incredible force. So I don't know if you ever had a problem in your house with your drains, and then you call the guy to come with a Roto-Rooter, and that doesn't work. And then the Roto-Rooter guy comes back with a power washer, and he puts down a force of pressure, a jets of water, and it's clean, and it's amazing. Hashem does exact same thing for us. Hashem puts a power washer. Hashem brings a level of spiritual energy that's so forceful, it's so powerful, that it cleans out any blockage that we could just put up by our own actions, by any sin or any omission that we may have done over the past year. And it completely opens up the channels. And what it does is, in the language of Kabbalah, it establishes our yechida, the unique part of our neshama that is always attached. It reattaches the power plant that we really have inside of us all the time, that we're really connected to all the time, but we have managed to put up blockages. Okay, fine. So now we understand Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur. Now that we think about that for a moment, and recognize and realize that Hashem is our loving parent. So we have now open channels. What happens when you have open channels and you have a loving parent? Starts coming in the energy. Now your channels are open. Sukkos is the time when the energy comes in. So the work that we have done over Rosh Hashanah to establish our relation, to reestablish, to recognize, and until Yom Kippur, to clear the channels, to reattach ourselves to our yechida level, the highest level of the neshama that's always connected, to reestablish that reality, that realization. Now comes the energy. Now comes the delivery. Now comes Chag HaAsif, the festival of ingathering, the energy flowing in to our lives, to our homes, to ourself. The energy is so powerful that our homes can't contain it. We go outside. We go outside our homes. And we sit in a sukkah. And the sukkah is reminiscent, reminds us of the Anani HaKavod. What was the Anani HaKavod? Why did the Jews have this incredible experience in the desert of not having the sun bother them and the snakes and scorpions and all kinds of straightening out? Because the incredible energy that Hashem showered on them then. Hashem continues to shower that energy on us today too. The language of Kabbalah, this is the energy of surrounding energy that is so powerful that it cannot enter into our system. It's too big for the system. It can't come into the house because it's so big. It's so powerful. It's too powerful for our homes. We have to create new vessels, new receptacles, new methodologies of enjoying and interacting with that energy. And that could only be according to the terms that Hashem gives us. Hashem gave us a gift, and the gift is, he gave us instructions how we can somehow enjoy and somehow feel that energy. Now, what happens if you're in a concert and you go to this concert, you paid a lot of money for the concert. All of a sudden you realize, oy vey, my ears are clogged, can't hear anything. Or you want to see a show or whatever it is, and some person is blocking you. Some big person is sitting in the street in a seat in front of you, and now you paid all this money. You have good seats, you thought, and all of a sudden somebody's blocking you. Can't see what's happening on the stage, and so what do you feel? You're feeling happy? No, you feel frustrated. You feel like I spent all this money, I made all this preparation, I did all this stuff, and I'd rather be home. I had to schlep out of my house and schlep and park and this and that. I should have stayed home. You're feeling very angry with yourself, feeling very frustrated. You're feeling very uncomfortable. So the Rebbe tells us, our Rebbes tell us, that if we go into the sukkah and we don't feel that incredible level of energy that's being showered on us, that's the same thing as being at a concert and having your ears plugged, being in a show, going to a museum and not being able to see clearly because you forgot your glasses or whatever. whatever analogy you want to use. Are you feeling happy? No, you're very uncomfortable. How could you sleep? How could you go to sleep in such a place? Not only is it so holy, but it's, and if you don't feel it, so if you feel it, you can't sleep. How are you going to go to sleep in a holy place? Such a holy place, you're going to go to sleep. Hashem's presence is so strong. How could you lie down and go to sleep? And if you don't feel it, then you feel even worse. So you feel that, oy vey, what's wrong with me? So that's why Chabad doesn't sleep in the sukkah at any rate. Because the power is so great and we don't feel it, so we're uncomfortable. If we're uncomfortable, we are exempt. But of course, the real reason is because the power is so great, how can we go to sleep there? So that's what the holiday of Sukkot is, the time is doing for us spiritually. It's the time of the delivering and receiving and the culmination and the feeling of all of the work that we have put in to the singular type of relationship of Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur. In the language of the second Lubavitcher Rebbe, called the Mittler Rebbe, the Mittler Rebbe explains to us that when you take a look at the rituals of Yom Kippur versus, or contrasted, not versus, but contrasted with the rituals of Sukkot. The rituals of Yom Kippur is that the Kohen Gadol, the high priest, the Kohen Gadol, had to do this service in the Beis HaMikdash wearing what the Torah calls bad. Bad means linen. He had to wear linen clothing, not his usual outfit, his usual uniform that also contained wool of different colors and gold threads and so on. But he wore simple linen clothing. The Mittler Rebbe explains to us that in Hebrew, the word bad means unique, singular, alone. And it is referring to the level of spiritual energy that is the Yechida level, the level, as I mentioned earlier, of that connection that is the level that we are always connected, part of our neshama that's always connected, that never becomes, it can't become disconnected. It's so high and so pure, does not get affected by anything that we've done, but that we can do to ourselves. And the Kohen Gadol is a representative, as I mentioned earlier, that on Yom Kippur, you don't have to go to the Beis HaMikdash, according to biblical law. The Kohen Gadol becomes our representative. And he does this, he accomplishes for every Jew the same thing, that each of us should be connected to the singular. So when you think about this for a moment, and we begin to realize the incredible awesomeness of the relationship between Yom Kippur and Rosh Hashanah, then Yom Kippur, one which is one process, and then Sukkot. So if you have a group of people, and you want to have unity between that group of people, how are you going to create unity? Well, you have a group of objects, and you want to have unity. So science is always looking for the unified field theory, the one theory that eventually we began to realize that everything is based on cells, molecules, atoms. Everything is based on energy. So the more you go back in the chain of the development of something, the more you become unified. The more you come back to the one. So when you talk about humans, we go back. We all come from Adam. Even Chava comes from Adam. That, parenthetically, that's one of the reasons that Hashem did not create Adam and Chava individually initially. Hashem created Adam. And Hashem created Adam as a two-sided person. And then Hashem separated those two sides into two people. Why did Hashem have to do that? Because everything comes from the one. Everything is going back to the one. Hashem didn't create two. Hashem created one, and the one then splits off. There's one cell. The one cell divides into two. The two divide into four, et cetera, et cetera. There's one set of DNA. The DNA is then passed down through the generations. So unity, therefore, is different. In English, the word unity is different than the word harmony. So listen to this. When we are on Yom Kippur, we are unified. We have unity. On Sukkot, we have harmony. What's the difference between unity and harmony? Unity is there's only one. That's it, only one. Why me, you, every other Jew in the world, all of our neshamas, all of our souls, come from the same pool of energy. In the language of Kabbalah, it's called Knesset Yisrael, it's called the Shekhinah, it's called different levels poetically, different, not levels, but different names are given poetically to this pool of energy that Hashem takes all of our souls from this pool and then parcels it out to different people, different individuals. But why can we have Ahavas Yisrael, love for a fellow Jew? Why does the Torah say, V'ahavta l'reicha kamocha, love your fellow as yourself, which is unique to the Jewish nation, the non-Jewish world? The Alter Rebbe says in the very first chapter in Tanya, the non-Jewish world cannot have this mitzvah. They cannot have this level of unity. It is physically impossible. And the reason is because we all come from a special one ball of energy, pool of energy. We, in fact, are different bodies, but our neshamas are all one. That is what Yom Kippur is all about. And if we go back to our source, then Yom Kippur also is the ultimate connected. Reads this is the stem. Science is doing this with stem cells today. How do you fix any problem that developed in the development of the DNA of the embryo and then the child and the adult? Go back, find stem cells, restart the process all over again. Yom Kippur is the ultimate stem cell experience, where Hashem puts us back into the yachid, the yechida, the one, the singularity, the unity, which is why we don't eat and drink. We're all dressed in white. We're all one. We're angels. We're back in the spiritual world. That's all great, and that's all wonderful. It's very high. It's very beautiful. But that's not why Hashem created the world. Hashem didn't create the world in order that we should be upstairs in heaven together with Him. Hashem created the world to have nachas from His kids being separate and yet doing what He wants. So what is the ultimate nachas that Hashem has? It's not Yom Kippur. The ultimate nachas Hashem has is Sukkot. And that's the difference between unity and harmony. Harmony is when different units get together and sing different notes, different tones, different things, but the song is complementary. So you have an orchestra that are different instruments. You have an artist that takes different colors and makes a picture. You have people that are just, you know, a teamwork, that an army or a team that's doing each one different thing, but they're all in their own way contributing a tapestry. There's different threads that and different stitches and different things. That is Sukkot. So Sukkot, the beauty of Sukkot is harmony. And again, this is a thought from the Mittler Rebbe, the Mittler Rebbe. How is this reflected in the actual mitzvahs of Sukkot? So if you take a look at the mitzvah of Sukkot, which is besides sitting in the sukkah, which, by the way, Hasidus and mystical teachings explain, sitting in the sukkah is the ultimate coming together of people. We're all together in a room. We're separate people, but we're all sitting in the sukkah. So the sukkah itself, the language of the Gemara, we should really, all Jews should really, really, really be in one sukkah. We should not have our own individual sukkahs, because that's the way it was in the desert. If you really want to fulfill the mitzvah the way it was in the desert, and if you really want to remember the way it was in the desert, well, in the desert, we didn't have separate sukkahs. We had huge clouds surrounding the entire Jewish nation. We should be able to have that same thing today, except, of course, it's next to impossible. So the Gemara says, when Mashiach comes, Hashem will reestablish that phenomenon. There's going to be a huge sukkah. In the language of the Gemara, it's going to be made from the skin of the Leviathan, the Leviathan, a whole bunch of stories. So the sukkah itself is a unifying structure. As soon as people come into the sukkah, we're together in the sukkah, which of course is why we like to host and all kinds of things like that. But then you take a look at the lulav and the hadassim and the aravis, the lulav is also unifying, but it's unifying, which is rather harmonizing. It's also units coming together. The lulav branch, the lulav is a branch from a palm tree. The palm tree could have leaves that are spread apart. Instead, each two leaves, if you ever opened up a lulav, you see that each leaf really is two, and the two are completely seamlessly connected. And all of the twos are still attached to the spine. As a matter of fact, if the lulav opens up, it's not kosher anymore. So the lulav itself is a poetic reenactment, like you would have a ballet where the people are reenacting some kind of a dance or something, and they're telling a story through their motions. So by us holding the lulav and the esrog, we're telling the same story through that action. We are holding the lulav, which is a palm branch, which could be separate. We don't take the branch that's separated. We take the branches together. You take a look at the myrtle, the hadassim. The myrtle is 333 leaves attached going around the stem, and they are hugging the stem so much so that when you look at a myrtle branch, you almost can't even see the center stem, the center branch, because the leaves are so much hugging. The aravas, the willow, is the same thing. The willow, when it's fresh, the leaves are also 2-2-2, but the leaves go 2-2-2 up the branch, but they're also close. They're also, again, it's first of all, it's 2-2-2, not all over, you know, all over the place. Like some branches, you have one leaf here, one leaf there, one leaf. No, willow branches grows 2-2-2. We try to take a willow that's 2-2-2. And they're also pretty much hugging. And then on top of that, we take, not separately, but we take the myrtle, the hadassim, and the aravas, the willow, and the lulav, and we tie it together so that we physically put them all together again. And then the esrog, which stands for the heart, the esrog, the Medrash says, is compared to our heart. You don't fulfill the mitzvah until you put them all together with your hands. So each of the components, this is again from the second Lubavitcher Rebbe, the Mittler Rebbe, each of the components of the lulav and esrog show harmony, show disparate things, separate things coming together, serving Hashem together. In the language of David HaMelech in Tehillim, kol atzmotai tomarna, all my bones, all my limbs come together and serve Hashem together, all my energies. So this is, again, so when we have Rosh Hashanah Kippur opens up the channels, Sukkahs, we have incredible energy pouring from Hashem into the sukkah, which is so holy for that reason. And when Hashem's energy pours into us as a people, then we come together. Then we all we wake up to our senses and we realize how special we are and how connected we are. And that's what the lulav and esrog is, a poetic, it's a ballet reenactment of this. We holding lulav and esrog is similar, more powerful. And people go to ballet, pay fortunes to go to ballet and to see a bunch of dancers jumping around, and you say, what are these guys doing? Well, oh, they're reenacting, they're showing this emotion, this story, that story. And, oh wow, I see it. Wow, it's amazing. Oh, look how, that's what we are given. We are charged as Jews to reenact, except when the Torah tells us this, our mystical chachamim, our chachamim explained to us, now we don't just show somebody else what's happening. By our actions, we're actually causing the energy to flow. The mitzvahs that we do don't just tell a story about something that happened 100 years ago, you know, 1,000 years ago, or yesterday, or comment on social, you know, justice or whatever it is. It's not just a story that we're telling. We're actually technicians, we're actually making things happen, we're actually making the energy flow. So this is what Sukkah is all about. For all these reasons, Sukkah is called Zman Simchasenu, the time of our joy, because whereas in Rosh Hashanah Kippur, we're simply preparing, Sukkah, we get the delivery. Sukkah, we get. So what happens on Shemini Atzeres, if that's the case? If Sukkah is so high and so wonderful, amazing, what happens on Shemini Atzeres? The answer is, we go back to the source. Shemini Atzeres, we get reconnected, and our Yechida shines again. Our Yechida shines again, but not in a way that it shined on Yom Kippur, where we're up there. It shines again, and if we feel it down here in our physical space, and that's why Shemini Atzeres becomes the day that we conclude the Torah, because after all, That's what it's all. We'll talk about that next week in Ritz Hashem. So this is very important to know as we're going into the holiday of Sukkot tonight, how amazing and incredible the energy of the Sukkah is. And as we have the opportunity to take Lulav and Esrog, we don't do it tomorrow because it's Shabbos. Another whole discussion, if it's so high and so amazing, why don't we do it on the first day, which is the biblical mitzvah? The other days is the rabbinic mitzvah. The biblical mitzvah is to do it the first day. Another whole discussion that all these energies happen through Shabbos. Another very, very fascinating discussion. But at any rate, we have the opportunity to take the Lulav and Esrog on Sunday in Mirtz Hashem. And if anybody needs a Lulav and Esrog, let me know. I'll put it in the mail to you. You get a Lulav and Esrog, I don't know, by Sunday, but by Monday, hopefully. Or you'll get it locally, wherever you are. But this is incredible. So it's not we're not just holding a lemon and a palm branch. We are channeling and causing amazing blessing to come to us. And that's why when we take Lulav and Esrog, we shake it in all six directions. We're bringing energy from all. Lot to talk about. So I want to wish you all a good yantif, a chag sameach, a good yantif, a time of simcha, a time of joy. We should be able to feel the joy. The rain is not going to bother us. At least right here in New Jersey, it seems to be lightening up a little bit. Who knows? But still drizzling, but not as strong as before. And I hope that we have the ability to recognize, realize, celebrate Yontif with our friends, with our family, and have all these blessings happen right away. The ultimate blessing we say in our benching, in the benching that we say after the meal, the Birkat HaMazon, is HaRachamon, V'yakim lanu, Esukas David HaNofeles, may Hashem reestablish for us the Sukkah of David, which of course means the Beis HaMikdash, which has been destroyed. And this is the ultimate blessing that we're asking Hashem to give us.